Do we start getting into Diddy?
Can go a bunch of different places.
We were just trying to figure out how to get everything done.
I really like to say that I backed my way into cuts. Customer service email.
Product development.
To whatever we're doing now.
Had this group of guys that was like, we're just going to get it done. Maybe 75% less of a paycheck. Why did you want to like leave that and join cuts?
We started talking like maybe we could go full time. Cuts is a real thing. Cuts is huge.
Southern China round trip. It was maybe like $1,000 for the both of us to get there.
And I think it was 8 different factories in 8 days.
I still feel like we're just getting started.
It's what if it doesn't work out?
Sean, what's good?
How we doing?
I'm doing good. So we decided to launch the pod again. And one thing that got me excited was, I think last time we overthought it a little bit, the podcast. And we try to get all these guests on and all these topics and all this preparation. And it kind of lost its focus on what we wanted to do, is just be there for our customers and showcase behind the scenes and what got us here. And over the last year, I felt like the brand was missing that energy of just telling our story and things we've learned. And so I'm excited today to just tell the story of Sean, of how you came on Cuts, and then we'll just start there and see where it goes.
Can go a bunch of different places.
It could. We were joking earlier today. Do we start getting into Diddy? And what was the other one?
The pyramids. The boat.
Oh, the boat of the
losing,
crash.
Losing power in the crash. We could break all that down.
Yeah, I tend to be a little bit more conspiracy than Sean. He's a little bit more of a realist.
Yeah, you're gonna really have to drive that one if that's where we go.
As you can see, me and Sean, we've worked with each other now for 7 years. Sean was Carter and Sean were the first three guys that and Brennan that were on Team Cuts. I think I was shortly after a Kickstarter that you came on, and do you want to kind of walk into how you started with Cuts?
Yeah. So I really like to say that I backed my way into Cuts. I was working at a different company at the time. I was working at the Boeing company in Seattle, starting a master's program. And I couldn't use Boeing proprietary data. I had known you. I said, hey, Steven, can I use the Cuts name? I can make up the data. You more or less said, hey, I'm trying to find a supplier. I haven't looked at the data one time. Here you go. Here's all of it, right? Took it. Maybe it was about a month or so. You came up to Seattle. We were getting a beer. I think there's a picture of it. I think it was in one of your first vlogs.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I was in. It was the vlog days.
We'll have to pull that footage here.
Yeah. Because I remember that still frame, and I'm showing you a bunch of data where you should do Facebook advertising, you know, where all your consumers came from, what you sold and all of it. Your eyes are kind of glossed over. I'm like, okay, he doesn't care. At least I've got data for my master's class. Mm-hmm. And I think what you said was like, this is great. But can you help me answer some customer service emails? Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay, we'll put the data aside for a second. We've kind of gotten back to that a little bit over the last 7 years, but, yeah, that's really where it started. Started answering some customer service emails. Carter and I would, I think, trade off nights.
Putting emails together,
answering people, doing returns, that sort of thing. Obviously, volume was a heck of a lot less back then. But, done a number of things since then, from customer service emails all the way to
Product development,
to whatever we're doing now. Yeah.
One of the things I always tell young founders was, you know, in the early days, you really need people that are just all in with the idea, because that was definitely the case what you described. When you first came on, we were just trying to figure out how to get everything done that we needed to, whether it was find a new supplier in China, which we have a bunch of stories there, or, you know, put emails together. We just kind of had this group of guys that was like, we're just going to get it done. But with all the little steps, we just loved every second of it. What was it like when, you know, obviously you had been working at Boeing for 6 years? What drawed you to cuts of wanting to leave, you know, a higher paying job? I think you took maybe 75% less of a paycheck when you started. Why did you want to like leave that and join cuts? And how did you go about maybe picking cuts? What was different about the cuts opportunity?
Yeah, I think it was a couple of things. One, you know, I got into Boeing is a massive bureaucratic company. Great company, learned a lot. But I could see exactly what my life was going to be. It was, you know, I worked the corporate ladder, make the right relationships. I could see, I knew exactly what the next 20 years of my corporate life looked like and wasn't excited about it. The second part too was, and I'm sure, I mean, obviously you remember this, but as we were going sale over sale, day over day, it kind of all of a sudden got to a point where we started talking like maybe we could go full time.
Mm-hmm.
And I really owe it to my girlfriend at the time, my wife now, where I was a little timid to approach her and be like, hey, I think we're going to go full time. And I did. And we had that conversation and she's like, finally, cuts is a real thing.
Love it.
Cuts is huge. And I was like, you know what? It is like this jump. It's going to be a risk. Like you were saying, move to California, have a, you know, smaller paycheck coming in, but the opportunity was so much bigger. And it was, you know, something that we had built to that point that, you know, it was the safe idea of corporate America and the exciting opportunity of building a startup with your buddies, with people that were just as excited as you every single day. I mean, we built this thing nights and weekends. And to be able to turn that into days and nights and weekends was exciting.
Yeah, I knew Sean was all in. We were in my dad's, my dad had an office that was kind of attached to his house where he worked out of. And in the early days, Sean would come over and we would work from that office when he was done with work on the weekends. And I think it was August of 2017 and we were, you know, barely just getting started, but we had like a day, maybe we did like 2,000 or 3,000. And I was living, I think I had just moved to LA at that time. Or I was heading to LA. I moved to LA October of 2017. So I hadn't moved yet. And Sean was like, okay, you know, all right, 2,000, you know, we'll be at 10,000 a day by here and so forth. And we had expectations to quickly, you know, get to full-time positions. And I think like, that's what got me excited. And momentum is so, it can be transferred from one person to another. Cause there was times when I was doing it by myself that I would get like, you know, bummed and down. But when you and Carter and Brennan came on, it quickly got me more and more excited because you guys believed in it and it only empowered my belief in the business. And then when we got in a room of four of us in LA, that's when we really started to feel like, man, this thing could be huge. What kind of going back to, the leaving the job of Boeing, was there any family members that were like, oh, you're crazy, or any stories there with like, hey, maybe this isn't the right opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. And that's not, you know, you have those thoughts as well internally,
yeah,
right? Like, yeah, it is a risk. We had plans to continue to grow and we could see that on the horizon, but still too, it's what if it doesn't work out? You know, there were definitely people that were questioning why you would do this, especially a lot of people that I worked with. In Seattle, Boeing, maybe not so much now, but Boeing is a lifer job. You get in, it's 200,000 people in the Puget Sound area. You can really do any job that you want, have any type of career there. And so people just don't leave. But, you know, again, I mean, I gave credit to my wife. I got to give credit to my parents, too. They were like, this is an amazing opportunity. This is exciting. You know, you have this opportunity. You've already built something. It's not like you're jumping without any foundation. Mm-hmm. And everybody that was around me could see the excitement that we had, right? That, like you were saying, that goes a long way in saying, you know, we might not know exactly where we're going to be in a year,
but we had momentum.
We have momentum. Yeah. We're excited. We're going to figure it out. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, we've had a lot of fun on the way. One of the, I'll let you kind of tell more of the story, but we had started making our items in LA, and we quickly realized, like, if we were to make them overseas, we could almost, I think we cut the cost almost by like 60%, maybe 70%. And we would have much more margin to buy more product, invest in the team, and continue to grow the business. So I was playing basketball one day, and this kid who I didn't really know at the time, you know, you don't expect someone to be serious in a game of basketball. And he goes, "Hey, Steven, like, whatever you're making that shirt for in LA, I can make it for half as less." And I was like, "All right, buddy, like, get back on defense." And, you know, I took his number and I gave it to Sean. And I just said, "Sean, can you just deal with this guy? Like, maybe, you know, when we go to China next week, we'll go and stop by and see him." We thought we knew what we were doing at the time because we had a bunch of meetings. But we had a 9 p.m. flight and we were at Hop Dottie's in Playa Vista. And we were just kind of waiting around till get on the airplane. And we were flying Southern China round trip. It was maybe like $1,000 for the both of us to get there. And this guy, Steven, calls me. And I didn't want to pick it up because I was like, "Man, this is BS. There's no way this guy can help us." I was like, "Sean, just take it." And Sean ended up taking the call. We go to China. The place we thought was going to be legit ended up to be like pretty much not a factory, like a joke. And then last minute, we're like, "Hey, buddy, like, you know, you told us, can you give us directions? Like, well, we're going to change our itinerary like right now." And maybe you provide more color on that story.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a crash course. I mean, we really didn't know what we were doing. Mm-hmm. You made some great relationships in Los Angeles, and people gave us, you know, an idea of what it was going to be like when we got over there. But we really didn't know until we got boots on the ground. And yeah, well, I'll never forget that. It's the vendor that you're talking about is our, you know, longstanding mm-hmm. vendor that we've been with for ever since we've been overseas. Been a fantastic partner to us, and it kind of came around again by happenstance. We kind of backed our way into that relationship, which happens quite often. And that's, you know, part of what's been cool about this journey the last 7 years, and we got plenty more to go, is like, you never know exactly how it's going to end up.
Mm-hmm. Those trips are a lot of fun because we would, just like at that time, I think it was in between the years of going from like 2 to 10 million. And, it was just like, I felt like an international businessman, being at, we would get picked up in like, what was it, like a Tesla or something?
Yeah, it was, we definitely felt like we were pretty cool. It was picked up at the airport in a Tesla, driven right to the door.
That was a big deal for us at the time.
Yeah.
And getting to like, I remember we were at a WeWork in Hong Kong for a meeting. And I was like, "How cool is this? Like, I'm here on my own dime, an idea that we worked on. We're in Hong Kong, and like, we're actually like talking about business." And then like later that night, they took us to dinner, and we're like doing business. And you know, we've done a lot of trips now, and I love doing business traveling to a new place because you go to places you would never go on vacation, but so you get to see like the culture and stuff. And we've had a lot of times like in long car rides. I mean, there was one car ride, I think it was like 8 hours from one part of China to the next. And this guy comes up and he has like a piece of paper that says like Mr. Sean on it. And we get in the car and the guy doesn't say a word for it. He drops us off at a bathroom once or twice on like this long road. And like, we were in the car so long, like we called it like our loopy phase. Like we just started like,
"You don't know what day it
is. We don't know what day it is." Yeah. Like everything looks the same, and we're just kind of talking back and forth, like making up games in the car. Yeah. But those were a lot of fun.
Yeah. You put a lot of faith. We put a lot of faith in some of those email relationships that we had, right? That first trip to China, I think it was 8 different factories in 8 days that we visited.
That was a lot.
8 different hotels. And it was just the next factory would come pick us up at the last factory and drive us. Sometimes it was 8 hours. It had to at least been 8 hours.
Yeah, that one was brutal.
Yeah, and you and I sitting in the back of a, you know, old Toyota and yucking it up. And figuring, then, figuring out cuts.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. What's been your favorite like role in cuts that you've played?
That's a good question. I think over the last couple, early on it was, I guess maybe the entire time it's been planning, right? Because, you know, as much as we're focused on the day-to-day, focused on how do we make today great, this week, this month, it's fun to continue to dream a little bit, mm-hmm. understand what's around the corner. And so I think, you know, thinking a little bit higher level, working with the product team, working with the growth team, working with the marketing team, and understanding, you know, how do we compound this success that we're having, maintain the success over a longer period of time, and put together a plan that's difficult to execute. Mm-hmm. I think that's been a real growing up exercise for us as a business. Is, you know, we have grown up in it, and being able to take those losses that we have, turn them into wins the next time. That's the fun stuff.
What's the biggest, like, maybe example of something that you've learned in cuts that that has really paid off for us?
I would say, you know, we had a, you know, all of e-com did, kind of a tumultuous couple of years, mm-hmm. 2020 and on. There ton of success, ton of supply chain issues in a physical product world. Sometimes you're beholden to a lot of external relationships, and I think those managing those external relationships and understanding how do we leverage them has been one of those key pieces to the cuts puzzle that maybe we didn't see beforehand how important those trips to China were, mm-hmm. How important having the trust of a vendor, and you know, those can't always be take. And I think we did a good job of that early on, where, mm-hmm. you know, as we're growing with a new partner overseas, you know, being able to give a little bit, and that allows us to get a little bit, mm-hmm. In those times of need.
Yeah, I think COVID was, I think we look back now and it was, I think in March of 2020, we thought, man, are we going out of business? Because it was like a 10-day window of really bad sales. And we were like, oh, shoot. You know, I remember sending an email to the team, like, this is the moment. We got to, like, like over-dramatizing it in a way. Like, we gotta band together. Like, in my head, I was thinking, okay, here's how much money we have in the bank account. Like, how long is that going to last? Like, everyone's going to get their pay cut and all this. And then, like, the exact opposite happened. Things started really working, and we sold out of all of our white tees, like all of June and July. We didn't have any white tees, and it was like a race to get things. And then, kind of on the back half of COVID, maybe the exact opposite happened, because we might have ordered a little too much at times, and then having to, you know, eat into that and get out of that mess. I hope that type of like unpredictable demand would never happen that extreme again. So I always say businesses that could have made it through that period, because, you know, when you heard Nike overbought by 65% and some of these other brands that were so high, you think, man, like, if they couldn't predict it, then, you know, our mistakes really weren't that bad. How do you understand predictive demand? And what are some things you look for to kind of get those inventory buys right?
Yeah, I think, I mean, in a business that's, you know, largely focused on performance marketing, you can gain a lot of insight there. And I think the way that we structure, the way that we do growth and performance marketing here allows a demand planner's job to be pretty easy. Mm-hmm. I think it's also, but that still, that's only one facet of it, right? Other facets being, you know, opinion in here. You know, we like to say that we are our customer, and we are, right? And so being able to understand what we want to do next, mm-hmm. as a voice of the consumer, right? We listen to our customers a lot. And being able to translate that into product, one, takes time. And so you got to make sure that you have a great plan that does span more than months, right?
One, yeah, on that note, one thing – that we're always talking about is sometimes like things just take a little bit of time where, you know, we had, you know, our women's tees, for example, you know, when we launched it, we came out of the gate, spending a lot of money, didn't see it, see the impact right away, you know, maybe 10 months later, almost when we like just kept pushing through, eventually something clicked. And I think for us, we've learned is like, we forget those first couple of years. It took us, you know, even though we got there pretty quickly, 10 mil still took a few years to get there. So like wanting to get women's like there in a year and get it quickly without any returning customers and building up the funnel and learning how to do the marketing, things take time. And, I think as you are in business more and more, you have almost less patience, because you've seen things work very well. But yeah, like just having patience with things, sometimes you just need to water the soil a little bit more to see the roots come out.
Yeah. 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 And having, alignment on expectations, right? Like we do want everything to pop right away. Mm-hmm. But it's a relative pop. You got to take into account seasonality. You got to take into account product market fit. You got to take into account other products that are already in the store. And so
we didn't do a good job at that. Yeah, like not. Yeah. And what Sean's mentioning is if you have X amount of units in the store, there's an opportunity cost of that next SKU. So you have to be really careful to not cannibalize maybe a winner or make it even, which we've done in the past, of make it harder to buy that item that has been doing so well. So there's a lot of decisions and products that if you make an additional buy, there's definitely some consequences, potentially good, but some that maybe are more than meets the eye that you really got to focus on.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a big, big puzzle you got to put together, and that's what makes it fun.
Mm-hmm. How's e-com changed over the last like couple of years?
Yeah, I think, you know, going back to that point in time where we thought everything was up and to the right.
Yeah.
Where the adoption of online shopping was, you know, here to stay and forever, right? I think eyes got really wide, expectations went through the roof. And like you were talking about, I think us to some degree and many companies, you know, got a little excited and got inventory on the way. I think that's normalized a little bit. I think the experience of shopping online, you know, people understand how to do it. I think a lot of people are really good at it too.
I think competition's
that competition is there, that arbitrage of Facebook and where we spend our money to advertise is normalized a little bit, and a lot of competition there. So I think it maybe that's the word. It's gotten more competitive, which is, you know, in many ways great. We thrive off competition.
Yeah. We definitely love competition. I mean, whether it's like, I think that's what makes, that's one of our secret sauces. We are very competitive. We effing hate the next brand. I mean, I know we've met founders of other companies that ended up being just dicks, and we just love talking shit about them. Maybe not as like an individual thing, but you know, you see some of the products these brands do, and we're just like, man, like Cuts is so much better than that. And I think you have to have that a little bit. I heard this story of Nike naming one of their shoes the Cortez, because the Cortez was the shoe that Adidas, like the Cortez conquered the whatever their name of their shoe was. And when I heard that story, that's what I wanted to create in our office of a bunch of guys and girls who wanted to absolutely dominate the opposing brands. And I think it's made us better in a lot of ways. We've seen, you know, competition, you know, lifts all tides because you want to get better. And I think that's something that we do well.
Yeah, you gotta have something on the wall with the target on it, right? Something that motivates us outside of us in here wanting to get better. I think, you know, a lot of us grew up playing sports. Mm-hmm. We have that competitive bone in our body, and it translates well to business, especially the line of work that we're in.
How's, like, when you've gone from, you know, demand planning to overseeing product and keeping operations, you know, you've worn like every hat in here. How do you compartmentalize the different, all the different things you do? And what is that like?
Yeah, I think, largely what it's done is, maybe given me some empathy towards other functions, right? We gotta have great communication. Mm-hmm. No one function is going to get the job done on their own. But there, are functions that need to lead, in certain parts of the calendar and others that need to lead in other parts of the calendar. And I think that's being, in a lot of different seats, wearing a lot of different hats within here, I think has only brought our organizational communication, cross-functional collaboration closer together and allowed us to make changes quicker, come to decisions faster, because there is that, you know, impartial, you know, in it, if I'm in a growth meeting, right, I can speak that language, but mm-hmm. I also understand the struggles that we're going to have maybe on the planning side,
yeah.
Right? When we have a supply chain constraint, I understand how next time around, you know, over-communicating with the vendor from a product level is going to be important.
And so, how that may affect growth.
Yeah.
So it's an asset that you've been, you know, overseeing, that you've done growth as well.
Yeah, yeah.
That's one thing that I think I've learned a lot is, growth is in every organization, especially, and I think we, at times we've potentially gotten away from that. In the early days of Cuts, it was, you know, every part of it was like how we're growing. When the company expanded and we didn't have that good growth loop on all the opportunities we had, some of them were good opportunities, but because they didn't have that growth loop of continuously trying to grow it, they just didn't grow. And so I think the intentionality of everything we do, everything we do has to grow. If we're gonna do it and it doesn't grow, there's really no purpose to do it. And that's something I think we've had to learn the hard way. And you know, I look at our Canada distribution center as one of those. It was something that was, you know, a good idea from, hey, localized shipping, faster shipping times. But you know, the growth of like that program and wanting to do all over the world was just something that, from an operations standpoint, we weren't ready for.
Yeah, yeah, and it wasn't maybe the biggest opportunity that we could go after at the time relative to the cost.
Yeah,
right. And I think that's a big part of what we've done over the past couple of years is we've definitely got shiny object syndrome. Mm-hmm. We've definitely gone after things, and I love that about us. Canada Distribution Center, right? We tried it. Mm-hmm. Opportunity wasn't realized as large as the cost became, right? And so we got out of it. And I think that's you know, indicative of the way that we operate. We're going to go after things. If it doesn't work, we're going to pull out of it. We're going to make a quick decision, and we're going to allocate those resources somewhere else and, yeah, continue to do that.
Yeah, one thing on that note of trying things that don't work, I think when you move fast and you – because we had a lot of success in the early days of just everything seemed to work, and I think – Not that we haven't had success recently, but I think when you get bigger, not every opportunity is going to work in the same way. And I think with certain staff and you know, hiring like crazy like we did in 22, you can realize things about what made your, you know, maybe early staff great that you didn't know to be intentional. I know, you know, really focusing on if someone was an athlete before or played competitive sports or liked to do physical fitness things. I think over the course of our 6 years, 7 years running a business, like we knew that was important, but when we hired people that wasn't important to, we realized how stark of a difference that might affect culture. And I think like for me, you know, Brendan always says this, they got to pass the beer test. Would you want to, if you got stuck in an airport for 4 hours and you just had to grab a beer with them, is it someone that you would want to sit there with for 4 hours and could talk about anything with? I think at times in, you know, shiny object syndrome or maybe excited about this company work history, we've maybe done that and it's definitely hurt the culture. How important is that?
Yeah.
I think
it's huge. And I think a big part of that is not having to teach somebody how to lose. Mm-hmm. If you've grown up playing sports, if you've been competitive, you know how to lose. Mm-hmm. You know loss is part of the game. And you pick yourself up and you figure out how to win. Mm-hmm. next time, right? And I think the value in not having to not having team members, especially when you know we're at the size that we were, size that we still are in many ways, you know, it's just ingrained, and people are tenacious and take losing as a learning opportunity, because that's you're going to have lots of failures, and so you got to be able to do that.
Yeah, no one likes an employee that gets easily offended. Like, that's sort of in that realm of not being able to lose. Because if you are someone who is easily offended, when you do lose, you'll take it offensive, and then you'll be offended, and it'll be really hard to critique. And I try to be, like, yesterday I was talking to someone that we might hire, and he was like, what's one thing about you as a leader that you've really learned? And I said, I try to be like, you could tell me my feet are ugly, my nose is big, X, Y, and Z, and like, I really don't care, because like, I just want to create the environment of like, you know, everyone has a time and a place for things. Not someone could walk into my office and say, fuck you. But, you know, I want everyone to feel like they can speak up and, you know, say their piece of if there's an idea that they do or don't like, if there's a product they feel a lot of conviction out, because that's where the togetherness of the group can create a lot of amazing things.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the team nature of the culture that we built here, and the, you know, the wanting to win together. That's a huge part of it as well. Right. And the fact that there, it shouldn't get personal in here, right? You were talking about other brands as well, and how we hate other brands, right? Maybe not on a personal level. We don't even know many of them.
Yeah.
But it is the enemy. Yeah. Right. That is the competition. And if we don't go take it, if we don't band together and go take it, it's going to get taken.
And right? It's so hard to create a business on its own, that having a good culture where people want to come to work every day is so important of being able to create good ideas. What's your take on, you know, I know we've been fully in the office 5 days a week, some remote. Like, how do you manage, like, kind of being hybrid?
Yeah, I think the important part is having a great process, right? And what that doesn't mean is bureaucracy. That doesn't mean a bunch of hoops that you got to go through. But when you do have people off-site, work can't stop, right? And I think that's where maybe a lot of people or a lot of brands can get hung up is the, you know, in needing to schedule a quick conversation now is a 30-minute or an hour-long Zoom, and you lose part of your day, and so you just avoid doing those types of things. I think it's making sure that you're balancing the ability to provide team members with a little bit of flexibility, but also ensure that it's enabling you to get more done. That's part of the idea, right? Maybe no commute. Okay, let's get more work done. And I think it just goes back to setting up a structure and a process, and having a real good understanding of how your business works will then allow you to be a little bit more flexible on that. But at the end of the day, the energy in the office is it's contagious, and that's difficult to you know, duplicate. Not in the physical setting.
Yeah, I hate. I mean, we come in 5 days a week, and there's a handful of us that do. But yeah, I'm still a big proponent of 5 days a week, even though in LA it's really hard to build a big team with those expectations, because the market in e-com is a little more difficult and a little bit more remote. And I'm not against remote, because I think people with long commutes and things like that, you know, it all comes down to hiring the right person. If the person's motivated and they're a stud, doesn't matter if they're in the office or remote, they can do a good job. However, I do believe like the collaborative time in the office is, you can't replicate that.
Yeah, and so much of the content that we put out, the marketing material that we have, there's a lot of emotion behind that. If we weren't physical, if we weren't, you know, even teams off the product team, seeing that product come to life, there's less investment in that, right? Maybe then there's less emotion that comes through the content, less emotion, less excitement that comes through in the marketing material. And I think that compounding all the way through that product from being an idea all the way to something that we're launching on our website, that, you know, ownership, collective ownership, that a collective excitement around that product, being physical with it, seeing it go from just an idea all the way through, is really one of our superpowers. Mm-hmm. And it does take being physically present. here and present for that to take place.
Yeah. And I think another lesson like I've learned is sometimes as a DTC brand, you can get caught up in like the X's and O's, like 1 + 2 = 3. And then I think what we've learned is there is an element of, you know, looking at the data and being very data driven, but it's also like just doing cool stuff. I think at times we had gotten away from that. And I look back to some of my favorite memories, whether it was our Super Bowl party and seeing a lot of the celebrities come, or the line was so long, or, you know, our store launch, things that maybe didn't always pencil from a profitability standpoint, but they were still really cool. I think those things really do matter. And we now know that how much they matter when we turn them off for a period and then turning back on. And that's part of the reason why we want to bring this podcast back and make it, you know, Sean's an employee at Cuts, partner at Cuts, and we'll still have celebrities on as well. But a podcast kind of brings the life back into the business. You get to hear from me, the founder, a lot of the people on the staff, and it gets me excited just to be able to share, you know, lessons that we've learned, fun stories, like, you know, going to China, you know, getting excited about all the little things that we've done over the time that gets me really excited. One story, you know, I'm jumping all over, but one time me and Sean had been on a long trip. It was at the end of the trip. We're at this factory and we immediately know we're not going to produce there. And the guy, you know, hands us a cigarette and we start smoking it. And then the rest of the trip, it was like our way to know, all right, let's get out of this factory. Let's just do the cigarette.
If we wanted to.
What do we call that? It was not for the sport, for the culture.
For the culture, yeah. It was, we figured out early on it was customary to have a cigarette after you tour the factory for the first time. And so, yeah, if we knew we weren't going to go with that factory, we would start asking for the cigarette. Just give us a cigarette and let's go.
And that was when, like, was it Snapchat was kind of going off? I think it was Snapchat or Instagram stories, and I would post videos like for the culture, and we would like those trips were a lot of fun just because it was so different. And, you know, again, that's when that loopy stage came when we were just, you know, smoking, going. Yeah. It was a lot of going from factory to factory. Yeah. What else have you enjoyed with Cuts during your time?
I think, you know, it's the emotion that we can evoke. Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking earlier about what's kind of changed in e-com, and I think that understanding of e-com 101 and set up a Shopify store, start running Facebook ads, and you got a business, those days are kind of numbered, if not gone, right? And so I think what's the most exciting part, obviously creating great product, having a great team, being excited about product launches and that sort of thing. But it's really the emotion that we can invoke when we really put our heads together and figure out, you know, how do we do something great? And I think we've done that a number of times, and I think we've got plans to do it plenty more times. But that's probably the most fun, because it takes so much work to put something like that together. And again, it takes all of us to be able to do that. And so, yeah, I'd say that's what gets me the most excited. That's when I have the most fun here.
Yeah, when I even just talking, thinking back to when we first started, we had my dad's little office, and now we have a big office. We have people all over the world wearing Cuts. Like even, you know, my most frustrated days, I'm like, man, this shit's getting hard. To now, like, even just kind of talking about it just now, it gets me excited where I still feel like we're just getting started. We have so much to learn. We've learned so much. And it's almost like the more and more I'm in business, the more and more I realize how little I do know. And I think our best days are in front of us.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and how little we do know, that's the fun part too, mm-hmm. right? Is that eagerness to continue to learn. I learn from people in here every single day, right? Mm-hmm. Being here for 7 years doesn't mean I know, you know, in all the roles that I've been in, I learn from every single person in here every day, and that's what gets me excited about coming in, right? Because I know we have a great team, fantastic brand, and the ability to showcase that.
Mm-hmm. Well, Sean, I appreciate you being the first pod. We're going to be doing more of these. We're trying not to overthink it. We want you guys to be able to see us and hear from us more, tell some stories of the brand, hopefully some insights in how to run a business and, you know, be more in front of the camera so you can see the people behind the brand. And I guess I owe Sammy to thank for, you know, giving you maybe that last little oomph you needed to join full time.
That was it. That was last nudge.
All right. I love it.
Yep. Awesome, man. Appreciate it, brother. Yep.